In this week's Classical Music According to Yehuda, Alan Chartok and Yehuda Hanani discuss the glass harmonica.
Yehuda Hanani, I know that you're a real musical scholar about some of the various instruments and stories that surround some of these things.
Well, I chose a number of instruments that are not common, that are rare and unusual, and you don't see them in orchestras, you don't hear them in classical concerts. And let's start with the glass harmonica. The phenomenon of rubbing a wet finger around the rim of a wine glass.
Indeed.
We all know.
Sure.
We all have tried it at a party, especially after having a glass of wine.
What's always amazing to me is that the volume in the glass affects the way the sound.
Absolutely. The thickness of the glass and the amount of wine or water that goes into it.
And the amount of wine or water that you've drunk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It all changes the pitch of the sound. And the sound is very eerie, very otherworldly.
And there are choruses, there are groups that do nothing but this. They're, little tiny orchestras.
Yeah. So this phenomenon of this vibrating glass with a moistened finger was documented already in the Renaissance. Mm. And Galileo mentions it in his book on science.
Really?
I guess he was intrigued by it. Of course, you have a few glasses. You can create a musical scale.
Exactly.
And then you can play more than one note at a time. You can actually harmonize.
Ooh, interesting. And do you think that was early? Do we have any way of
this? This was discovered quite early. And as awkward as it is, because you have to constantly moisten your finger.
Yeah.
The opera composer Gluck,
of course,
in the 1740s, was a famous virtuoso on the glass harmonica. They used to call it musical glasses at the time. But it was, now that's going to surprise you, it was Benjamin Franklin who found time in his extraordinarily busy life to develop the ultimate glass harmonica. He called it glass harmonica with an A, but it doesn't matter. It all comes from the Greek word harmonia, which means harmony. Franklin did it in the 1760s. What Franklin did is he made it much simpler and easier to play. It was ready tuned. You didn't have to add or subtract the water from the glass for the pitch. It was ready tuned. He had 24 glass discs or bowls differing in size that were fitted on a horizontal rod like a shish kebab on a skewer.
Oh, interesting. Do we have a copy of that?
Yeah. It exists in Washington in a museum. Uh-huh. And this rod with the discs sat on top of a trough of water so that the rim of the bowls just barely touched the water. And you turned it, you rotated it with a foot pedal mechanism, very much like an old-fashioned sewing machine, right? So your foot kept turning the entire rod. And this freed your fingers. You didn't have to keep wetting them with your saliva. You kept your fingers free to actually play the music the way you play a piano. And you could literally produce 10 sounds at a time.
But it didn't catch on.
For a while it did. So all the player had to do was just place fingers. And the discs were colored a different color so you could identify the pitch.
Uh-huh.
It was a very clever invention.
Well, he was a fairly clever guy.
Must have been a brilliant man.
Dr. Franklin.
There were some concerns about the instrument, some myths, both about the sound and the fact that the glass contained lead. And the rumor was that, especially when you wetted your finger with your mouth and you took it from the glass back into your lips.
It was probably true.
That there was going to be lead poisoning. And the rumor was that glass harmonica players went mad. They just lost their minds.
Well, that's interesting because that's also true, Yehuda, for the hat makers in Danbury, Connecticut.
I was going to mention that exactly. Yeah. So
mad as a hatter.
Yeah. So, we know that lead was ubiquitous. It was all over the place. It was in utensils. It was in cans.
It's on our windowsills in New York.
Still, yeah.
Not on ours.
You know, it was in makeup.
Yeah.
Women put it on their face. It was in paint. And the expression, as you said, the expression mad as a hatter comes from the fact that those ladies who shaped those elaborate hats with fruits and designs on them, in order to keep everything in place, there was the powdered lead to keep it going, to keep it holding together. So I think the glass harmonica was just a part of this multiple uses of usages of lead, and it was unfair.
And who plays the glass harmonica now?
Let's stay in the 19th century for a moment, because that's very interesting. I found a quote from a musicologist, a German musicologist, by the name of Friedrich Rochlitz. And he says, the harmonica excessively stimulates the nerves, plunging the player into a nagging depression and hence into a dark and melancholy mood that is apt method for self-annihilation.
Wow.
Now,
that's something.
So this has to do with the sound of the harmonica that they thought had some mental effect on you. Nevertheless, European monarchs loved the glass harmonica. Marie Antoinette took lessons in musical harmonica. And
she lost her head over it. Sorry, I couldn't help.
All right. And Linda Ronstadt used this haunting sound in some of her albums. And I have examples of all of this to show our listeners. So first, let's start with a pure harmonica sound. One person is playing a canon, of course, using both hands, on the glass harmonica the way Franklin invented it. And then we listen to a piece by Mozart, Beethoven, Haydn. They all wrote for the glass harmonica.
Wow.
So there will be a demonstration of a beautiful piece of chamber music with glass harmonica and some other instruments. And at the end, we have a song by Linda Ronstadt.
So, Yehuda, I understand that you have a story about Linda Ronstadt.
Yes, I do. I was giving a masterclass in Aspen.
Yep.
And a student arrives driving a very fancy car, but in a very bad shape. It was beat up, top of the line. I forget which car, but you could tell it was a very high-end car. In a terrible condition, the paint was peeling.
They do that in Colorado and in Connecticut. They drive those cars.
Anyway, he walks in, he plays. His name was Michael Ronstadt.
Oh, boy.
And I said, "Hi, Michael, where did you get this car?" And he says, "Oh, my aunt gave it to me."
Oh.
His aunt was Linda, because I direct a chamber music series that you are, of course, very much aware of and one of the patrons of. I thought it would be nice to have Linda with us for a concert.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned it to our board, and some of the boards, the male members of our board, swooned. I didn't realize. They said it when they were teenagers.
Oh, my God. She was
She was it. She was their goddess. She was their fantasy. Yeah. She was everything. So I called her because her nephew gave me her telephone number. We had many conversations. She was very interested. We exchanged ideas about songs that she would sing, the orchestration, this and that. And I told her about board members who are dreaming about seeing her again. And at the last moment, I get a call from Linda and she says, you know, I'm approaching 70. I've gained a lot of weight. My voice is not what it used to be. Those friends of yours, those board members,
they all remember me from
this. They have this fantastic image. Let them live with this image. I'm not coming.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Well, yeah.
This is my story, but let's listen to her song with the accompaniment of the glass harmonica.
Love, love, where can you be? Are you out there looking for me? Love, love, where can you be? Love, I am waiting. Heartbeats accelerating. Will you come along still from the river or the hill? Love, love, where can you be?
That was Alan Chartok speaking with Yehuda Hanani in our segment, Classical Music According to Yehuda. For information about Yehuda's Close Encounters with Music series in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, visit cewm.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.